All right, the inaugural episode of Pod Sacamano. I'm back podcasting after a big hiatus, and I'm happy to be joined by, you know, the Brooklyn Nets ticket guru. You hear him on, you hear him all over Twitter talking mostly, you know, betting. And I mean, I'm pretty nervous about my own Northwestern Wildcats getting into the NCAA tournament. But we got Reed Wallach here, host of the Early Read. Works for Betsided. Reed, how you doing?
Sam, happy to be on the pod, obviously. A lot going on in Nets world and, yeah, busy season coming around. I know college sports are typically what the job calls for, but the Nets are still my unfortunate pride and joy. I can't seem to knock them as much as I wish I should. But, yeah, happy to be on. And I think a positive podcast on the way talking about the Nets and what has been an otherwise gloomy season.
Yeah. So I think anyone who's listening to this podcast is part of, you know, the Nets niche, really cares Nets world culture, and is probably already aware, especially by the time they listen to this, that Jock Vaughn has obviously been, in the words of the Nets, relieved of his duties. Or fired in modern language. But I guess your initial take on the news. First of all, were you surprised?
No, I have a pretty good track record of predicting some of these Nets things. I just feel like the team is pretty. You could see what's coming with this team. They're you know, to toot my own horn, but I tweeted right after the 50-point loss to the Celtics or whatever it ended up being. I thought that it was a fantastic time for the Nets to really kind of take the All-Star break and reset. Maybe give Kevin Ollie half a season. I know he hasn't been named the interim, but give him half a season, see if he could stick, see if the guys or the team kind of respond to him, maybe make the playing game. I don't know. So I thought it was actually a really good time to fire Vaughn, who had very clearly lost the locker room, was completely outcoached in certain scenarios. And I think Vaughn was dealt a pretty tough hand with being the head coach of a pretty poor roster. I know we had chatted before the season that I was pretty down on the Nets' chance of being anywhere competitive. I thought that the team lacked a lot of really key parts of a strong roster or even a half-decent roster. But if you watch the games, you saw that the Nets were completely outmanned. They didn't really have any sort of coaching acumen that a team that is out-talented, they need a good coach that could kind of bridge the gap between some of those things, especially in the grind of a regular season. And I saw it pretty clearly that Vaughn was outmanned. You know, when Vaughn stepped in for Nash last year and it was Durant and Kyrie who kind of just didn't really vibe with Nash, it seemed like Vaughn, his coaching stance, he's maybe a good assistant, buddy-buddy with the good players and stuff. But when it comes to, like, you need strong coaching and you need a tactician, Vaughn drops the ball there. And so and it was obvious when he got fired from Orlando, I believe, in his second season, he's not a player developer, or he's not going to help out scheme a team. So I'm not surprised by the news. That was a long way of saying that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm surprised in that I thought that if something like this was going to happen, it was going to be after the season. But having said that, I mean, he had multiple losses this year. And I think, like, you know, me and you are not part of, you know, irrational, crazy Nets Twitter that, you know, wants to fire people and trade someone after one bad game. But he had enough, in my opinion, bad games that were so damning, like where the team just looked like they were not ready for the game and basically had not watched any tape of the team they were playing, had no scheme, had made no adjustments. I mean, I go back to, I mean, look, I mean, to preface, the team basically started spiraling after the disaster of the Bucks game, but they had multiple games, including, you know, the game in Paris against the Cavs, where they looked like they should not have been on the same court with Bickerstaff and that Cavs team, even though they were without Garland and Mobley at the time. And obviously I know they won a bunch of games without them, but still. And you know, my thought has always been about coaching is that a coach needs to be fired if either what they're saying is not coming through to the players and or the players just when they are on the even if they're trying to do what the coach wants to do and likes the coach, they're just still completely outclassed. And in this instance, it was probably more the former than the latter, but I think it was actually a combination of both. I think they just never looked like they were playing the same type of like level of basketball as anybody else. And for, even though people like me and you did not think before the year, I mean, look, I hammered their under. I did not think this team was going to be that good. They had, this wasn't a team that was tanking. This was a team that wanted to be competitive. And the fact that they were where they were and game after game being down at multiple points by 25, 30 points, and the fact that they kind of would make it seem closer and by the end lose by anywhere from 8 to 14, Nets fans knew that a lot of these games were just blowouts.
Yeah, I just think, and even the games where they were winning, you know, go through like since the turn of the year, the Thunder game where the Nets were up like 30 at one point, the Heat game after Paris, like those were really like, if you were just watching the games, they were just, the opponent would miss open shots and the Nets would thrive in the open kind of part of the game where, you know, it's a regular season game in the middle of the year. You know, you're not going to get a full locked in effort. The Nets would kind of thrive off of some positive 3-point variance. And then the second half comes around. Teams knew you could come back on this team because they're going to get tight. They're going to go cold. And the game is going to start favoring the clear, better team because there wasn't really a scheme that the Nets have. There was no real continuity. And I mean, look, we could go through kind of bashing Vaughn for however long. I think, you know, decent assistant coach, whatever. If you put him in the right system, maybe he thrives again, like the Durant Kyrie team makes a lot of sense for a guy like him as a head coach. But to me, I think there are way too many games where you just see a team that was unprepared. I mean, the fact that he was starting Dinwiddie for the entire first half of the season when it was so glaringly obvious that he should not have been playing with Cam Thomas, should not have been on the court whatsoever. I don't really know what the Nets were doing. And going back to what you were saying, the Nets aren't a rebuilding team. And again, I see a lot of the national media chiming in on the firing of Vaughn. It's just very obvious that these people speaking on them have no idea what the Nets were selling and what they were trying to be this season. Because even in what was a tempered expectation season, I think the Nets were hoping, hey, we'll make the playoffs, we'll be, or the play-in at the very least, and be semi-competitive in these games and we'll be overachievers. The Nets weren't even that. I mean, they're 2.5 games out of the play-in game going into the second half of the year, or unofficial second half of the year. And they're behind teams that have been, you know, falling on their face as well. Atlanta, Chicago spotted what? They were like 3-12 to start the season or something.
Yeah.
So I just think it's a disaster. And again, a lot of this, it all stems from the top. If you want to keep going with kind of where the string goes here, but I mean, who's Sean Marks have left to blame now? Because I think that's where my attention is turning. And I think you rarely see a GM get to hire or choose four coaches that have won one playoff series in what will be his ninth season next year. He's the third longest tenured GM in the NBA. And I know he got Durant, he got Kyrie, he got Harden. He also lost all those guys. And we don't need to get into how he lost those guys, but I'm running out of ways to see how Sean Marks is still running this team. And many will point to, well, Cy likes him. Maybe it's time for Cy to fire Marks or let Marks go, relieve him of his duties as if this is war, and maybe throw some money at someone who has ran a successful franchise. Hint, hint, wink, wink, like Bob Myers or something. And maybe I'm shooting too high, but maybe it's time for Joe Cy to hire someone that won't just be a puppet and will just obey whatever he says.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do want to talk about Marks. To close the loop on the Vaughn thing, to me, Vaughn had a really similar kind of year and a half, 2 years, whatever you want to call it, in a lot of ways to what I love doing cross sports references to kind of like what the Giants had with Ben McAdoo, which was just like a coach that, you know, kind of got into the playoffs. And obviously for Vaughn, a lot of that was because of what KD and Kyrie had spotted him to start the year. But it seemed like things were okay. And then there was a tempered, I mean, I would say it was very, very, very tempered optimism about Vaughn to say, and that's probably even a little strong as opposed to McAdoo. But then within a year and even less than that, completely lost the locker room, seemed like he was in over his head, and basically any goodwill that was was gained the year before was lost and then some. And that, and to me, you know, Vaughn obviously didn't even prove as much as McAdoo did in his first year. But that was basically kind of how I saw those two, how I saw the Vaughn situation. Because I mean, look, I think Vaughn, in my opinion, is the worst Nets coach that really that I've seen. Even like, I know people compare him to, you know,
I don't know about that.
People compare him to Lionel Hollins and Kiki. I mean, Kiki Vanua is hard to compare to because of how short, small the sample size was. Hollins was terrible with the Nets, but at least had some type of track record. The like the this year with Vaughn was almost unlike anything I had really seen, just from an effort and scheming perspective. And also, you know, being lucky enough to be sitting in your seat sometimes and at the games. I mean, it basically looked like guys who were playing on a playground a lot of times. Like it was just no offense whatsoever. Just like people setting a pick up top and then playing ISO to after that. But you mentioned Sean Marks, and to me, like this is really the pivotal moment, right? Because I think almost every Nets fan is happy that Vaughn isn't the coach anymore. But to me, and this is just me reading the tea leaves, I have to think that as much as people, and especially in the national media, love to say that Joe Tsai and Sean Marks are in lockstep and whatnot, the last even 2 weeks do not tell me that they're in lockstep, in part because, you know, Sean Marks did not have a trade deadline that would make you think that this guy has ultimate job security, because the only guys that got traded were people that were free agents anyway. And, you know, guys like Dinwiddie and Royce in a lot of ways had to get dealt. And, you know, it's hard for me to think that Tsai at this point has given Marks that much leash, even with what we know about their relationship. Because even firing Vaughn to me is almost similar to like a letting Dinwiddie and Royce go, or trading them. I know that, you know, Vaughn had years left on his deal, but like, I don't think it was a ton of money. And we're not talking about some, you know, standout coach where it's such a big deal to let him go. The fan base had clearly lost any amount of faith in him. And so the question to me is, you know, is Marks actually going to hire the fourth coach? Because the interim stuff is obviously just a holding pattern move. Mm-hmm. And if he's not hiring the next coach, when is Marks going to be relieved of his duties? Because although the Nets don't have a pick in 2024, you do want for the next couple of months. I mean, the draft is in 4 months, free agency is in a little bit more than that. You want the next regime, whoever it is, to start to, you know, put together their own apparatus.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting to see. I mean, look, I said in the tweet where I thought it was a good time to fire Vaughn, I thought it was too wishful thinking. I mean, I think Mark should go. I think you need a fresh face in here. I thought he should have went last season when the Nets clearly should have pivoted towards a full rebuild. And just another blemish on Mark's record is not cashing in some of these assets that he has, whether it's Mikal Bridges, whether it's Dorian Finney-Smith, not cashing out, getting what, in my opinion, is an absolute get-out-of-jail-free card, life raft, whatever analogy you want to use. If Houston's going to give you back 70% of the Harden haul for Mikal Bridges, and then you can make up the other 30% by dealing guys like Dorian Finney-Smith, Cam Johnson, whatever, and to get almost whole again on the Rockets deal, and you basically erase the Harden trade going back to Houston, and you restart a rebuild. You could even bring in a new GM who gets a blank canvas. You get a new coach who could really develop. You don't even have to shoot that big. You could go with maybe more of a developer type from like the assistant ranks or something. I think the Nets really, really missed the ball here. I honestly believe you're looking at right now what they're probably going to do is go for a star in the offseason. I don't know why Donovan Mitchell would want it. Be enthused to join here, but to me, like, the Nets are turning into what the Wizards were prior to blowing it up this offseason. Over the past like 5 to 10 years, they are what the Bulls currently are. This is a team that I think is really setting themselves up for a gloomy outlook in the future, because before you know it, Mikal Bridgeson expiring deal. Dorian Finney-Smith's contract is going to expire. All these guys are no longer bargains. They become overpaid assets and they lose their trade value and the team just isn't going anywhere. Like, I don't know how you look at this team. Forget the coach for a second. Look at the players. Look at the fit and the roster. I don't see how you see this team and it's like, oh, we are like a Donovan Mitchell away from pushing the Celtics and the Bucks here or whoever else, the Sixers. I think there are at least two players away, two big moves away, need a new coach. I don't know. I think the Nets really missed the ball at the deadline to really put themselves in it. What is like an Oklahoma City in stratosphere in terms of future assets?
Yeah, I mean, what I wonder honestly is, and this has to do with the whole Mark's job security thing, which I mean, the biggest, you know, undercovered story in the NBA world, which no one cares about except for fanatics like us, is why Sean Marks's contract status is like just completely unknown. But with that said, the way that he is acting right now and firing Vaughn to me is basically, as you said, I mean, that's a move that a GM does when they're running out of options. And yeah. Like it to me, it's similar to, I think if the Cavs decide to not make a move about with Donovan Mitchell this summer, it'll be, I assume, because they have an early exit and they know that their last kind of life raft is, well, let's get rid of Bickerstaff and let's get a coach that he wants and try to, and we've seen that happen a lot. Usually it never works, but we've seen teams kind of, or GMs or player or organizations try to do whatever they can to basically save what they're doing. Because at the end of the day, these guys are trying to save their livelihood. And to
yeah,
me,
and,
yeah, go ahead.
No, I just, to me, again, when you have guys that are on their second contract already comprising a majority of your team, I'm talking like Mikal Bridges and like, that's pretty much it. Cause he's like the only real redeemable player. Your clock is ticking so much faster than if you drafted like the super, like the, one of the key guys that you were hoping to pair with. Like before you know it, Bridges, like if the Nets don't strike this offseason and they run this type of idea back, we like, unmitigated disaster, like beyond epic proportions. This team needs a serious shakeup in the offseason. And if like you want to bring in a star, that's fine. But you are really fitting into a tight window because before you know it, when next season's over, Mikal Bridges on an expiring contract. And based on his trajectory as a high usage guy, that next contract he's going to get where it's over $30 million a year, over $35 million a year, that's not a bargain anymore. He was a cheat code when he was acquired last year.
Yep.
When you are on that second contract, you have such a smaller window to really act and hit on these guys. And that's why the Nets aren't just yet in that Oklahoma City in threshold of assets. Because when the Thunder got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who is now, in my opinion, probably the most valuable player in the league right now, they got him after his rookie season. They got Mikal Bridges after his, what, like fifth, sixth year in the league?
Yeah.
The clock is already ticking on Bridges.
And he played longer in college.
Exactly. So you're already waste every, like, event. Like, I'm talking, like, offseason, trade deadline, like, those, like, tentpole events where guys get moved. The Nets are acting on a very, very short clock here. And let's just say they do get Donovan Mitchell in the offseason and it flames out and, like, he doesn't sign the extension. All of a sudden, the Nets are in, like, absolute disarray, you know, like we're talking like barbaric stages of asset management where, again, I think Marks, he should have been fired last summer because to me in this league, it is results driven. And when you fail, you need to start over. That is why you rarely see GMs and coaches get like a second tour of duty, you know, going with the relieved of duties, you know, wartime thing. Yeah. When, you know, you fail, and you really fail, like the Nets ultimately did, you get a fresh face in there to run the team because Sean Marks is never going to sign up for a full rebuild because he knows he wouldn't survive it.
Yeah.
He's always trying to get back what he had lost at the sunk cost fallacy where he's always going to try and get back to that Durant Kyrie level. It's just not going to happen. And the Nets are just wasting this time where you have actual assets that can be cashed into building a future. And they're just not acting that way. They're acting, you know, in their own best interest. And that's why, you know, Cy is one of the most disastrous owners I have seen in, you know, recent memory.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's interesting. I mean, I probably go back and forth on what I think that they should do. I think a lot of it also depends on, to me, everything is deal based, and to me, a lot of it depends on what we're actually expecting this Donovan Mitchell trade like potential to be. Because if it's going to be, you know, what the Cavs initially gave up for him, then I think it could potentially be a disaster. But he's also, if he's on basically, you know, if he's basically telling the Cavs, like what Paul George said to Indy, there's no way I'm signing back to you, then the assets that the Cavs should get back should be a fraction of it. And if he also says, I want to be in New York and maybe Miami, then you're talking about also a way fewer options that are out there to trade for him. So to me, like, that's a big part of it. But I do agree with you. I mean, look, there obviously is an element of, if you can end up basically trading Kevin Durant and from trading KD alone, you're basically talking about getting 8 first. If you're talking about everything they got from Phoenix and getting all, plus the swaps and getting almost everything you got back from Houston for Bridges, who you got for Durant. I mean, that's a pretty insane package to be given back on top of, you know, the pick you got for Kyrie, the 2 picks you got for Harden, whatever. Then you're actually in shape to move forward. So I see both options. To me, I obviously don't want them to make stupid win now moves just for the sake of being a 6 seed. I think that if you're going to go the star route, it has to be ones where you're getting star players on, you know, the 75% of the dollar type thing, like the way that, and not in the same exact light, but almost in a way that Toronto got Kawhi. Like, you have to be making those types of deals. Cause I do agree that you can't give up what the Cavs gave up for Mitchell, which, you know, would be the equivalent, I guess, from a Nets perspective of giving up, you know, basically everything they got from Phoenix plus Cam Thomas plus, you know, salary filler, et cetera.
Yeah. I'm like going through my head. I haven't written this down. I'm just thinking, but like, again, if we're counting on like Sean Marks to execute these trades, what trade? I have to go back and think, I guess D'Lo for Brook Lopez, but over the last few years now, we are seeing Sean Marks isn't necessarily the best trade negotiator, in my opinion. I don't really see it. I think, you know, he overplayed his hand with Harden and he got absolutely, you know, taken to school by Daryl Morey. Like Kyrie, I guess you're stockpiling assets up. Like Durant basically chose where he went. Kyrie, you got Dorian Finney-Smith, you got Dennis Schroeder, you got those picks that may pan out. That's like fine-ish, I guess. Like, I don't know if Sean Marks, it seems like he can hit on maybe the buy low guys in free agency, but like when it comes to trading, hasn't been a glowing track record of like scraping, you know, everything clean, in my opinion. He seems to have kind of diamond hands with his guys and seems to over leverage certain players at the wrong time. Maybe that's like more of that might be short sighted on my part.
Yeah, I guess so. Before we finish up, you know, your prediction of, I guess, one, do you think Marks is still the GM by basically the draft? And if not, when do you see a move happening?
My prediction will be that Marks is still the GM going into next season. And I imagine the Nets have some sort of, through back channels, they expect that a star will come on the table, that they will package a good part of like their Phoenix Dallas assets for, and they will keep on with this retooling, is what I believe it's being called. Whereas that is like the complete opposite direction that I would go. So maybe I'm like trying to project my negativity out into the world and maybe like it will come back the other way. But it just seems like all these decisions are being made in the idea that they have pretty good indications that a superstar or all-star level player is going to hit the market. And they believe that they can push into what isn't a dominant Eastern Conference, but is a pretty, pretty strong East, in my opinion, a handful of good teams. They believe they could get into that mix and, you know, maybe a few things break their way and they end up in the finals. Whereas I think that's like incredibly short-sighted, but, you know, such is life.
Yeah. I mean, it is. I thought the Ian Begley quote was really interesting, that it said, which I really have never seen when a coach was fired, which was that the Nets felt that having Jock Vaughn as a head coach would deter, you know, the team from getting stars. Like, that's like a pretty, I mean, that's a pretty, not only is it a damning quote about the Nets, but it's a pretty, you know, I'm trying to think what the right word is. It shows some level of foresight that the Nets are telling, you know, writers that they think that, you know, Vaughn has some type of stench attached to him, that that no star would ever want to, you know, be associated with him, and or that they, you know, saw what he did this year. And I don't know if that is, you know, like Bridges talking to people, because, like, I mean, it's clear that Bridges was really unhappy. I mean, like, one of the last games that I had been to was, I think, the day of the trade deadline, or 2 days before. It might have been the Mavericks game. And he looked, I mean, Bridges looked as just out of it as I've ever seen him. And so from that perspective, that was just a very telling quote to me.
Yeah. I think even more so the fact that they're even thinking that way, like they're even saying like a star wouldn't want to come here. There's just the fact that they're thinking in that mind of what a star wants, to me, telegraphs their plans. And I mean, everything they've done this year and since they trade Durant telegraphs that they are still in the star game and they don't want to go through the long, arduous rebuild, which I don't even think would take that long, but I don't run the team, not yet at least.
Yeah, we still have time for our lead to sugar. But look, I don't want to keep you. Thanks for joining. We gotta hope that maybe they go on a little bit of the post firing coach win streak here. They got Toronto on Thursday in Toronto, two teams that are just, you know, really battling for that 10 seed. So we'll see what happens. And I'm glad that I do like that Dinwiddie was one of the people that was vocal about Vaughn not being a good coach, even though he put in zero effort and also is now in Los Angeles anyway. So
yeah, I mean, I hope just at least for the rest of the season, I really do hope, and it's a shame that Whitehead can't seem to stay healthy. Maybe that pick is just gonna be a whiff, but I do really hope this team, I mean, it's kind of what I've been asking for a while, but like the Jalen Wilsons of the world, even Clowney, like those guys getting run, I think, see who can stick around and who could hang. Like, I do think that's pretty important to the next phase of this. Maybe it helps showcase guys that could get moved this summer if they're going to go the star route. But I just hope that whoever's the coach, whether it's Weaver, Ollie, whoever, I just hope that they stop this facade that they are contending and that this is like some legit operation, because it's not. The Nets are an absolute laughingstock and they're a joke. So I think they hope they come to their senses and they try to at least lean into playing a looser brand of basketball, something that is a little bit more at their actual level and not try to be something that they're not.
Yep, I totally agree. They got to like give up the dream of the 9-10 or whatever, play the young guys, play Clowney, who's actually looked way more comfortable than I ever thought. I mean, Clowney was horrendous in summer league and has actually looked good when he's played. Wilson's looked good. Obviously, let's see if like Cam Thomas can continue to develop. I'm totally with you. And I'm, you know, we're still waiting. I mean, it's now been a couple of hours after, and there still hasn't been an interim coach named, which is pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, they're having a free throw contest at the facility right now. Who gets the job.
Yeah, playing knockout where you can like kick the ball away from people. All right, Reed, I'll let you go. Thanks for joining on this first pod. And everybody should check out Reed's work and follow him. You're at Reed Wallach, correct?
Yeah, at my name, at Reed Wallach. Check out the podcast, The Early Reed. Typically a college sports podcast, but actually dropping tonight, like a second half NBA, you know, preview. It's very betting focused, but gonna talk some awards, gonna talk some second half storylines, you know, what we're looking for in the second half of the NBA season. So should be a good one. And thanks for having me on, and you know, go Nets, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. Go Nets, I guess, should be the slogan for this year.
Go Nets, I guess.
All right. See you, man.